flag at all.
Alternatively, suggested Tom, you could look at it like this. Between the two of you, you've had a completely normal, healthy dating life.
I don't know why it never works out for him.
Bridget seemed genuinely bewildered that her awful friend was single.
He's so lovely, and he dresses so well, and his house is so clean and tastefully decorated.
James Rolls-Royce pulled a wry face.
I hate to say it, darling, but he seems to be exactly what you're looking for. Refusing to even meet with the man would be deeply ungracious.
But if he's so fucking perfect, I pointed out, with his nice job and his nice house and his nice clothes, what the hell is he going to want with me?
You're nice too.
One of Bridget's hands landed consolingly on mine.
You just try very hard to pretend you aren't. And anyway, leave everything to me. I'm super good at this sort of thing.
I was pretty sure my dating life was about to go off a bridge and into a river, and quite possibly wind up with spoilers all over the internet. But, God help me, it looked like Oliver Blackwood was my best hope.
Chapter 6.
3 days later, against my better judgment, and despite my protests, I was getting ready for a date with Oliver Blackwood. The WhatsApp group, One Gay More, was alive with advice, mainly about what I shouldn't wear, which seemed to amount to everything in my wardrobe. In the end, I went with my skinniest jeans, my pointiest shoes, the only shirt I could find that didn't need ironing, and a tailored jacket. I wasn't going to win any fashion awards, but I thought I'd struck a nice balance between has made no effort and is disgustingly desperate. Unfortunately, too much texting, faffing, and selfie-taking for the approval of the peanut gallery had made me late. On the other hand, Oliver was a friend of Bridget's, so he'd probably developed a certain tolerance for tardiness over the years. As I cantered through the door of Quo Vadis, his pick, I wouldn't have dared go for anything so classy, it quickly became apparent he had not, in fact, developed any tolerance for tardiness whatsoever. He was sitting at a corner table, the light from the stained glass windows dappling over his frown in shades of sapphire and gold. The fingers of one hand tapped impatiently against the tablecloth, the other cradled a pocket watch on a fob, which he was in the process of checking with the air of a man who had done so several times already. Seriously, though, a fob? Who even... I'm so sorry, I panted. I... Nope, I had nothing, so I had to fall back on the obvious. I'm late.
These things happen.
At my arrival, he'd risen like we were at a tea dance in the 50s, leaving me totally at a loss for what I was supposed to do in response. Shake his hand? Kiss his cheek? Check with my chaperone? Should I sit down?
Unless... One of his brows tilted quizzically. You have another engagement.
Was that a joke? No, I'm, all yours. He made a be-my-guest gesture, and I wriggled gracelessly onto the banquette. Silence stretched between us, as socially discomforting as mozzarella strings. Oliver was much as I remembered him, a cool, clean, modern art piece of a man entitled Disapproval in Pinstripes, and handsome enough to annoy me. My own face looked as if Picasso had created it on a bad day, bits of my mum and my dad thrown together without rhyme or reason. But Oliver had the sort of perfect symmetry that 18th century philosophers would have taken as evidence for the existence of God.
Are you wearing eyeliner?
He asked. What? No.
Really?
Well, it's the kind of thing I think I'd remember. I'm pretty sure this is just what my eyes look like.
He looked slightly affronted. That's ridiculous.
Thankfully, at this juncture, a waiter materialized with the menus, giving us an excuse to ignore each other for a few happy minutes.
You should start, remarked Oliver, with the smoked eel sandwich. It's a speciality.
Since the menu came in the form of a broadsheet, with hand-drawn illustrations and a weather report at the top, it took me a moment to find what he was talking about.
It damn well ought to be for a tenner. Since I will be paying, that need not concern you. I squirmed, which made my jeans squeak against the leather. I'd be more comfortable if we went halvesies. I wouldn't, given I chose the restaurant, and I believe Bridget said you work with dung beetles?
I work for dung beetles.
Okay, that didn't sound much better.
I mean, I work for their preservation.
Another of his eyebrow twitches. I wasn't aware they needed preserving.
Yeah, neither are most people. That's the problem. Science isn't exactly my strong point, but the short version is they're good for the soil, and if they go extinct, we'll all starve to death.
Then you're doing good work. But I know for a fact that even the big-name charities pay far less than the private sector.
His eyes, which were a hard gunmetal grey, held mine so long and so steadily that I actually started sweating.
This is on me. I insist.
It felt weirdly patriarchal, but I wasn't sure I was allowed to complain about that, on account of us both being men.
If it will make you feel better, you could allow me to order for you. This is one of my favourite restaurants, and...
He shifted position, and accidentally kicked me under the table.
My apologies. I enjoy introducing people to it.
Are you going to expect me to trim your cigar later?
Is that a euphemism?
Only in Gigi, I sighed. But fine, I guess you can order for me, if you really want to.
For about 0.2 seconds, he looked perilously close to happy.
I can?
Yes, and... God, why was I always so ungracious? Sorry, thank you.
Do you have any dietary restrictions?
Nope, I'll eat anything. Food-wise, that is.
And...
He hesitated, then tried to pretend he hadn't.
Are we drinking?
My heart did the half-dead fish flop it always did when conversation strayed even tangentially close to any of the things that have been said about me over the years.
I know you've got no reason to believe this, but I'm not an alcoholic, or a sexaholic, or a drug addict.
There was a lengthy silence. I stared at the crisp white tablecloth, wanting to die.
Well, Oliver said at last, I've one reason to believe it.
In an ideal world, I would have behaved with terrible dignity. In the world I actually lived in, I gave him a sullen glance.
Which is?
You told me otherwise. So, are we drinking?
My stomach had gone into a wild freefall. I hardly knew why.
Can we not, if you don't mind? While I don't have medical problems with alcohol, I do tend to make a bit of a tit of myself when plastered.
I'm aware.
And to think I'd almost liked him. Although technically I didn't have to like him. I just had to make him think I liked him for long enough that he'd date me for long enough that I wouldn't get fired. It was fine. I could do this. I could be charming. I was naturally charming. I was a quarter Irish and a quarter French. You couldn't get more charming than that.
The waiter returned, and while I sat in sulky silence, Oliver placed our order.
The whole experience was slightly strange, since I still hadn't figured out how demeaning I should be finding it. I definitely wouldn't have wanted it to happen regularly. But there was also some pathetic, lonely part of me that enjoyed being so publicly possessed. Especially by a man like Oliver Blackwood. It felt perilously close to being worth something.
I can't help but notice, I began, when the waiter departed, that if this fish sarnie is all that in a bag of chips, you aren't having one.
Yes, well...
Surprisingly, Oliver went a teeny bit pink around the ears.
I'm a vegetarian.
Then how do you know about the magic eel?
I've eaten meat before, and I like it. It's just I've reached the point that I can't justify it, ethically.
But you're cheerfully going to sit there and watch me chow down on bits of dead animal like some kind of creepy carnivore?
He blinked.
I hadn't thought of it that way. I just wanted you to enjoy the food, and I'd never impose my principles on people who don't necessarily share them.
Was it me? Or had he basically said, I think you're behaving unethically, but I assume I can't expect any better from you? The mature making this work and saving my job reaction would be to let that slide. Thanks. I always like my dinner served with a sprinkling of sanctimony.
That's rather unfair.
Oliver moved again and kicked me again.
Especially given you'd have been equally, if not more, offended if I'd ordered vegetarian without asking you. Also, I'm sorry I keep catching you with my feet. Yours are never where I'm expecting them to be.
I gave him one of my meanest looks. These things happen. The conversation hadn't so much died on us as been taken out back and shot in the head. And I knew I should be playing paramedic, but I couldn't quite bring myself to, or work out how. Instead, I crunched on some of the baked salsify and parmesan that had just arrived, which was delicious, in spite of the fact I had no idea what salsify was, and didn't want to give Oliver the satisfaction of asking him, and wondered what it would be like being here with somebody I could actually stand. It was a lovely, cozy place, with the brightly painted windows and caramel leather seating, and the food was clearly going to be amazing. The sort of restaurant you'd come back to for anniversaries and special occasions, and reminisce about the perfect first date you shared there. The fish sarnie, when it showed up, turned out to be pretty much the most perfect thing I'd ever eaten. Buttery sourdough wrapped around smoky slabs of eel, slathered in truly fiery horseradish and Dijon mustard, and served with pickled red onions, just sharp enough to cut through the meaty intensity of the fish. I think maybe I genuinely moaned. Okay, I said, once I'd inhaled it. I was too hasty. That was so good, I could pretty much marry you now. Maybe I was seeing the world through eel-tinted glasses. But right then, Oliver's eyes had a touch of silver in them, and were softer than I'd thought.
I'm happy you liked it.
I could eat one every day for the rest of my life. How could you know these exist and give them up?
I thought it was the right thing to do.
I can't tell if that's really commendable or really tragic. He lifted one shoulder in a self-conscious shrug, and the silence between us, while still not comfortable, seemed slightly less jagged. Maybe this was going to be okay. Maybe we'd been saved by a dead fish. Still riding my sandwich bliss, I felt slightly more able to make the effort. I seem to remember you being a lawyer or something.
I'm a barrister, yes.
And what do you barrist?
The toe of his shoe whomped me in the knee. God, I'm sorry, I've done it again.
I've got to say, you play one hell of a hardcore game of footsie.
I assure you, it's been accidental every time.
He looked so mortified, I took pity on him. It's me, I'm all legs. We both peered beneath the tablecloth. How about if I suggested, swinging my feet to the right. He shuffled his Italian leather Oxfords left.
And I go...
His ankle brushed against mine as we rearranged ourselves. And it had clearly been way too long since I got laid, because I damn near fainted. Dragging my attention away from our under-table negotiations, I found him watching me with this crooked half-smile, as if we'd single-handedly, footedly, brought peace to the Middle East. And all of a sudden, he was a lot more bearable. Enough more bearable that I could almost see myself putting up with a man who smiled like that, and bought me amazing eel sandwiches, even if I didn't have to. Which was way, way worse than not liking him. Chapter 7. Your job? I asked, with all the smoothness of a bowl of granola.
Yes. Well, I...
This time, his foot only stroked the side of mine as it jiggled under the table.
Specialize in criminal defense, And you might as well get it over with.
Get what over with?
The question that everyone asks when you tell them you work in criminal defence.
This felt uncomfortably like failing an exam. In a blind panic, I blurted out the first thing that came into my head. Do you have sex in the wig?
He stared at me. No, because they're very expensive, very uncomfortable, and I have to wear mine to work.
Oh. I tried to come up with another question, except now all I could think of was, do you have sex in the robe? And that obviously wasn't going to help.
The question people usually ask, he went on, like he was the only one in the play who'd remembered his lines, is how do you live with yourself when you spend your whole life putting rapists and murderers back on the street?
Actually, that is a good question.
Should I answer it?
Well, you seem to really want to.
It's not about whether I want to.
His jaw tightened.
It's about whether you're going to think I'm an amoral profiteer if I don't.
I couldn't imagine that he, or anyone, would care that much for my opinion, good, bad, or indifferent. I spread my hands in a go-for-it gesture. I guess you'd better tell me then.
The short version is, an adversarial justice system isn't perfect, but it's the best that we've got. Statistically, yes, most people I defend in court are guilty because the police can broadly do their jobs. But even people who probably did it are entitled to a zealous legal defence, and that's a principle to which I am ideologically committed.
Thankfully, while he'd been delivering this monologue, which only needed some stirring background music to reach its full dramatic potential, I was served a truly glorious pie. Beef, as it turned out, almost meltingly soft, swimming in gravy and barely contained by its crisp pastry cap. Wow! I glanced up from the pie and slammed straight into Oliver's hardest, coldest glare. You seem really defensive about this.
I just find it helps to be honest from the beginning. This is who I am, and what I do, and I believe in what I do.
I suddenly noticed he'd barely touched his beetroot, I think it was. Beetroot and other virtuous vegetables. His hands were folded against the table so tightly that his knuckles were white. Oliver, I said softly, realizing I'd never said his name before, and confused by how intimate it was. I don't think you're a bad person, which you must know means next to nothing coming from me, because you only have to pick up a paper or Google my name to know what sort of person I am.
Now he looked uncomfortable for a different reason. I am aware of your reputation, but if I'm to know you, Lucien, I'd rather it came from you.
Shit. This had got real out of nowhere. How hard could it be to get a guy to like you enough to date you for a few months, but not so much that you had to deal with those weird emotion things that fucked with your head, ruined your sleep, and left you crying on the bathroom floor at 3 a.m? Well, for starters, it's Luke.
Luke?
Somehow I could always tell when people pronounced it with a K and an E.
It seems a shame when Lucien is such a beautiful name.
Actually, that's the English pronunciation.
Surely it's not.
He flinched.
Lucien, as the Americans would have it.
No, God no. My mother's French.
Ah, Lucien, then.
He said it perfectly, too, with the half-swallowed softness of the final syllable, smiling at me, the first full smile I'd seen from him, and shocking in its sweetness.
Vraiment? Vous parlez français?
There's really no excuse for what happened next. I think maybe I just wanted him to keep smiling at me, because for some reason I said, oui, oui, un peu. And then, to my horror, he rattled off God knew what, leaving me to scrape the bottom of the barrel of my GCSE French, for which I'd received a D. Je voudrais aller au cinéma avec mes amis. Où est la salle de bain?
Utterly perplexed, he pointed. So I was obliged to go to the bathroom. And when I slunk back, he immediately confronted me with,
"You don't speak French at all, do you?"
"No," I hung my head. "I mean, my mother used both when I was growing up, but I still turned out stubbornly monolingual."
"Then why didn't you just say that?"
"I don't know. I guess I assumed you didn't speak French either."
"Why on earth would I imply I could speak French when I couldn't?"
I stuffed a teetering forkful of pie into my mouth. "You're right, that would be a deranged thing to do." Another of our silences. On a scale of uncomfortable to horrible, I would probably rate this as unpleasant, and I didn't know what to do. I definitely succeeded in swinging the needle away from dangerously intimate. Unfortunately, it was now pointing squarely at not a chance in hell. I half thought about kicking him, just to see how he'd react. But that was probably about as weird as randomly pretending I spoke French. God, this was why I was never going to get a proper boyfriend, or even a semi-acceptable temporary substitute. I'd lost whatever capacity I ever had to relate to people in a romantic way. "How come you're so fluent?" I asked, in a subcompetent attempt to salvage the evening. He poked sheepishly at the remains of his vegetables.
"Family have a holiday home in Provence."
"Of course they did." "Of course you do."
"What do you mean by that?"
I shrugged. "Just, I can imagine it. No wonder you grew up all nice and put together and perfect. And way too good for me."
"I've certainly never claimed to be perfect, Lucien."
"Oh, stop it with the Lucien, will you?"
"I'm sorry. I didn't realise you didn't like it."
Except I did like it. That was the problem. I wasn't here to like things. Liking things was trouble. "I told you before," I snarled. "It's Luke, just Luke."
"Noted."
A few minutes later, with me looking out the window and Oliver looking at his hands, the waiter came to clear our plates. And a few minutes after that, a lemon posset topped with rhubarb arrived. It was exquisitely simple. This little white ramekin full of sunshine yellow cream, topped by a pile of pinkish spirals. I felt awful. "Nothing for you?" I indicated the empty space in front of Oliver.
"I'm not a fan of desserts, but I hope you'll like this one. It's very good."
"If you're not a fan, how do you know it's..." I wriggled my fingers into air quotes. "Very good." "Do you want to share it with me?" It was the closest I could get right then to an apology. Because it wasn't like I could say, "Sorry, I'm so desperate for this to work and so terrified of this working that I'm lashing out at you over things like you being quite nice and not wholly unattractive and having had an ordinary childhood." He was eyeing the lemon posset the way I've always wanted someone to look at me.
"Maybe I could have a little. Let me ask for more cutlery."
"No need." Okay. It was, at the 11th and a half hour, time to get my sexy on. I broke the pristine surface of the cream, mounding it perfectly onto the spoon, along with a few pieces of rhubarb. And, holding it out to Oliver, I offered him my very best, most hopeful smile. Whereupon he took the spoon from my fingers, crushing me so utterly, I couldn't even enjoy the way a taste of lemon posset made his whole face go dreamy with bliss.
"Thank you,"
he said, returning the damn spoon. I plunged it violently into the pudding, shoveling what remained into my mouth as if it was my mortal enemy. Oliver watched me, confused once again.
"Should I order another one?"
"No, I'm good. Let's get out of here."
I'll get the bill.
God, I was undateable. Genuinely fucking undateable. No wonder Oliver had practically vomited when that randomer at Bridges' party had thought we were going out. No wonder he dumped me in bed and run away screaming that time I tried to hit on him. No wonder he didn't even trust me to put a spoon of pudding in his mouth.
Chapter 8.
I was still in a daze of self-loathing as we trooped onto Dean Street, where we hovered in mutual uncertainty. All the lovely things I'd eaten had turned to rocks in my stomach. I'd fucked this up. I'd fucked this up so badly. All I'd had to do was smile, be nice to him, convince him for a handful of hours I was a semi-worthwhile human being. But no, I'd curled up like a hedgehog on a motorway in front of the only man in London willing to go out with me. And now, I was going to get fired.
Oliver cleared his throat.
Well, thank you for that.
He was wearing the full-length overcoat that every posh person in London owned. Except it suited him. Gave him this air of effortless quality, while I was standing there in slutty jeans.
Anyway, he went on, I should...
No, help, no. If he walked away now, that was it. I'd never see him again, and I'd never have another job again, and my life would be over. I needed a plan. I didn't have a plan. So, I lost my fucking mind and threw myself at him, fastening my mouth on his with all the grace and charm of a barnacle on a whale's flipper. It lasted seconds before he pushed me away, a knee-buckling blur of heat and softness that, for the sweetest of moments, tasted of lemon posset.
What the hell was... Christ!
In his zeal to get away, Oliver collided with one of the potted plants outside the restaurant, just about managing to grab it before it came crashing down. Which basically meant he'd spent more time voluntarily touching a ficus than he had me. It was a kiss, I said, with a nonchalance I was far from feeling. Why, haven't you had one before? People sometimes exchange them on dates. He turned on me with such ferocity that I actually took a step back.
Is this a game to you? What has Bridget told you?
What? No.
Tell me what's going on.
Nothing's going on. We were sort of dancing down the street at this point, me skipping backwards over the pavement as he stalked after me, shoes clicking and coat flying. There was clearly something very, very wrong with me, because it was kind of hot. His eyes gleamed.
Now.
I tripped over the curb as it flattened unexpectedly at a side street. But Oliver caught my wrist before I could fall, yanking me against his body and holding me there, making me, I guess, equivalent to a plant in his estimation. God, his coat was cozy.
Please stop playing with me, Luke.
Now he just sounded tired, maybe even a little sad.
What's this really about?
Fuck. The jig was beyond up. I've been in the papers again recently, so I need a respectable boyfriend or I'll lose my job. Bridge suggested you. And of course, Tom had been right all along. It sounded terrible. I ducked my head, barely able to look Oliver in the face. I'm sorry, I went on, inadequately. I'll pay you back for dinner. He ignored that.
Bridget thought I'd be good for you.
Well, I flapped a hand at him. Look at you. You're perfect.
I beg your pardon?
Never mind. I had no right to touch anything so nice, but I hid my face against his coat, and he let me. You've always acted like you thought you were better than me. I was close enough that I heard him swallow.
Is that what you believe?
Well, it's true, you are. Happy now?
Not remotely.
The pause that followed whistled in my ears like I was falling.
Explain to me again, said Oliver, finally. Why you need a boyfriend?
It was the least I owed him. Mainly for this big fundraiser we've got coming up at the end of April. Our donors all think I'm a bad gay. He frowned.
What's a good gay?
Someone like you.
I see.
Don't worry about it. I finally managed to peel myself off his coat. It's not your prop...
I'll do it.
My jaw dropped open so hard, it clicked. You what?
As it happens, I also have an event coming up that may go more smoothly with someone on my arm. I'll be your public boyfriend if you'll be mine.
He was insane. He had to be insane.
It's not the same. You mean, one of his cool, grey glances. I'm to help you with your significant occasion, but you won't help me with mine?
No, God no. It's just you're a fancy lawyer.
I'm a criminal barrister. Most people think we're the scum of the earth.
And I'm the disgraced son of a disgraced rock star. I can't hold my drink. I'm unnecessarily mean. I make terrible decisions. You can't possibly want me to accompany you to anything.
His chin came up. Nevertheless, those are my terms.
You know you'll end up in the tabloids if you spend too long with me.
I don't care what people say about me.
I laughed, shocking even myself with how bitter it sounded.
You think that, and then they start saying things.
I'll take the risk.
Really?
God. Dizzily, I found myself reaching for his coat again.
Yes, but if we're to do this, we have to do it properly.
I blinked at him. Properly sounded ominous. I was not good at properly.
You should know I perform very badly in standardized tests.
I just need you to make an effort to be convincing. I don't care about your past or internet gossip, but...
And here that stern mouth pressed into a hard line.
I would rather not have to explain to my family that my boyfriend is only pretending.
Wait, your family?
Yes. It's my parents' ruby wedding anniversary in June. I don't want to go alone.
Is it...
I couldn't help asking. In Provence?
Milton Keynes.
And you seriously want to take me to meet your folks?
Why not?
I barked out another laugh.
How long have you got?
If you don't want to do it, Luke, you can tell me.
He was never going to call me Lucien again, was he? He was going to respect my wishes like some kind of asshole.
No, no.
I hastily flung up my hands. I'll do it. I just think you're making a terrible mistake.
That's for me to decide.
He paused, a flush crawling over the sculpted arch of his cheekbones.
Obviously, maintaining the fiction will require a certain degree of physical contact between us. But please don't kiss me again. Not on the mouth, anyway.
Why? Are you Julia Roberts in Pretty Woman?
His blush deepened.
No, I simply prefer to reserve that intimacy for people I actually like.
Oh. Sometimes you can half believe you've been hurt so much you've basically been vaccinated, rendered immune. And then someone says something like that to you. I forced my mouth into a grin.
Well, as you've seen, that's not a problem for me.
My only consolation was that Oliver didn't look very happy either.
Apparently not.
But don't worry, despite recent evidence, I can keep my lips off you.
Good. Thank you.
Silence sloshed heavily between us.
So, I asked, what now?
Brunch at mine? This Sunday?
Twice in a week? He'd be sick of me before we even made it to the Beetle Drive. And I'd either be sick of him, or I wouldn't. And wouldn't was too scary to handle right now.
If this is going to work...
He gazed at me solemnly.
We need to get to know each other, Luke.
You can call me Lucien,
I blurted out.
I thought you said you didn't...
It can be your special name for me. I mean...
Suddenly I could barely catch my breath. Your fake special name for me. That's a thing, right, that couples do?
But I don't want to have a fake special name for you that you genuinely don't like.
There was that light again, those secret flecks of silver in the cold steel of his eyes.
That would make me a terrible fake boyfriend.
It's fine, I overreacted. I don't care.
That's hardly an endorsement.
I mean, I don't mind.
Was he going to make me beg? Who was I kidding? I was probably going to.
This was why relationships sucked. They made you need shit you'd been perfectly happy not needing, and then they took them away.
He gave me one of those too searching, too sincere looks.
Well, if that's what you want.
I nodded, quietly hating myself. It's what I want.
Then I'll see you on Sunday.
He smiled. Oliver Blackwood was smiling. At me. For me. Because of me.
Lucien.
Chapter 9. So, I said to Alex Twaddle, a man walks into a bar, and he sits down, and there's the bowl of peanuts, and a voice comes from the bowl of peanuts saying, "Hey, your hair looks great." And then this other voice comes from the cigarette machine on the other side of the bar saying, "No, it doesn't. You look like a prick, and so does your mum." Alex's eyes widened. "Oh, I say, that's a bit much." "Yeah, keep that in mind because it's sort of integral to the joke. Anyway, the man asks the barman what's going on, and the barman says, "Don't worry, the nuts are complimentary, but the cigarette machine's out of order." "Well, I suppose they wouldn't have bothered to fix it because you're not allowed to smoke in pubs anymore."
I should have seen this coming.
"You're right, Alex. It's the accuracy that makes it funnier."
"I'll keep that in mind, too."
He smiled at me encouragingly.
"What's the rest of the joke?"
"That was the joke. The nuts are complimentary, but the cigarette machine is out of order."
"Are you sure that's a joke? It just seems like facts about a bar."
"Once again," I told him, resigned to my fate, "you've hit the nail on the head. I'll try and do better tomorrow." I toodled back to my office, actually in a pretty good mood for once. My date with Oliver had been, as predicted, a disaster. But somehow not in a bad way. And there was something strangely liberating about having a pretend boyfriend, because it meant I didn't have to worry about all the usual relationship things. You know, like being shit at them. Even my morning tabloid alert had been borderline positive. Someone had snapped us at the restaurant, but crucially they'd got the moment before Oliver recoiled from me in disgust. So it had come out looking kind of romantic, with Oliver's coat billowing around us, and his face turned up to mine as my lips came down. The headlines were mostly variants of "Package Judge Club Kid Son in New Gent Squeeze Shock," which I liked, because it suggested I had good taste in new squeezes. New fake squeezes. As I sat down and checked the donor lists to see if anyone else had dumped me, the phone rang.
"Oh my God," cried Bridge. "You won't believe what's happened."
"You're right, I probably..."
"I can't really talk about it, but we've just got the English language rights for a really prestigious Swedish author, and everybody's been clamouring to read her debut novel, which is being billed as 100 Years of Solitude meets Gone Girl. But there was a lot of debate amongst the team over whether to give it an English title or stick with the Swedish original, and it all wound up being sorted out very last minute, and so now the book's gone to press as... I'm out of the office at the moment, please forward any translation work to my personal email address."
"I don't know. I think it's got a certain meta-textual cachet."
"I'm going to get fired."
"You've not been fired yet, Bridge. They're not going to fire you over this."
"Oh."
She perked up.
"That reminds me. How did your date go?"
"It was awful. We have nothing in common. I think I might have sexually assaulted him. But we're going to pretend to give it a go anyway, because we're both desperate."
"I knew you'd work it out."
I rolled my eyes, but only because she couldn't see me. "That's not working something out, that's making something up."
"Yes, but you'll slowly discover that you're not as different as you initially assumed, and then he'll surprise you with how thoughtful he is, and then you'll come to his rescue in an unexpected moment of need, and you'll fall madly in love with each other and live happily ever after."
"That's never going to happen. He doesn't even like me."
"What?"
I could hear the look on her face.
"Why would he agree to go on a date with you if he didn't like you?"
"Remember the bit where we're both desperate?"
"Luke, I'm sure he likes you. How could anybody not like you? You're lovely."
"He told me he didn't when I tried to kiss him." She gave a little squeak.
"You kissed?"
"No, I attacked him with my lips, and he was so repulsed he jumped into a potted plant."
"Maybe he was surprised."
"I was surprised when you guys threw me a surprise birthday party. Okay, I wasn't surprised because James Rolls-Royce accidentally told me, but I didn't pull away in horror saying I only go to parties with people I like.
Wait, he actually said that?
Pretty much. If you replace go to parties with kiss.
Oh.
There was a moment's silence.
I thought you were just being obsessively negative, you know, like usual.
No, those were his exact words. She sighed.
Oliver, what are you doing? He can be so hopeless sometimes.
He's not hopeless. He's an uptight git. Like in general, not because he was bothered by me non-consensually kissing him. Okay, let me rephrase. He's an uptight git who, independent of his uptightness and gititude, isn't into me.
Luke!
She cried.
That's not true!
Then she gave a weird hiccup.
I mean, he's not an uptight person. He's very... He always wants to do the right thing. And honestly, I think he's quite lonely.
I increasingly think some people are meant to be lonely. I'm lonely because I'm a wreck, and nobody wants me. He's lonely because he's awful, and nobody wants him.
See? You do have something in common.
Not funny, Bridge.
Are you seriously telling me there was nothing about the date that went well? Nothing you liked or connected with?
Well... There was no denying the man had excellent taste in fish sandwiches and lemon posset. And there was that hidden softness in his eyes sometimes, and his rare smile, and the way he said, Lucien, like it was just for me. No, I said firmly, absolutely not.
I don't believe you. You only make such a big deal about hating people when you're secretly into them.
Look, can you come to terms with the idea that you know two gay people who wouldn't be good together?
I would, except...
Her voice lifted plaintively.
You'd be so good together!
Okay, I know you can't see it, but I'm holding up the fetishization card.
What does that card even look like?
It looks like two adorable men in sweaters holding hands under a rainbow.
I thought you wanted to hold hands with an adorable man under a rainbow.
I do, but the fact you want it almost as much as I do is what makes it creepy. She let out a melancholy sigh.
I just want you to be happy, especially after I stole Tom.
You didn't steal him. He just liked you better. If I said it enough, hopefully one of us would start to believe it.
Anyway,
she went on briskly,
I've got to go. One of our authors emailed to say he had his entire manuscript on a USB stick that was swallowed by a duck.
Who the fuck is still using USB sticks?
Really have to deal with this. Love you, bye.
I'd got as far as, but, before the line went dead. To be honest, it was probably about time I started doing my job anyway. Now that Operation Fake Respectable Boyfriend was a go, I was potentially in a position to try to salvage the Beetle Drive. Which in practice would mean begging forgiveness from people I didn't think had anything to forgive me for, and who wouldn't admit that they thought I needed to be forgiven. The first step would be reaching out and saying, Hi, I know you all think I'm a dirty, junky pervert, but I've cleaned up my act and renewed my commitment to living my life by a set of standards that you made up for me in your heads. Now please, for the love of God, give us some money so we can save the bugs that eat shit. Except, you know... without using any of those words, or ideas, or sentiments. After a long afternoon, 6 cups of Fairclough standard coffee, 23 drafts and 3 breaks, in each of which I had to give the same explanation to Rhys Jones-Bowen about how to do double-sided photocopies, I'd composed an appropriately diplomatic email and sent it off. To be honest, I probably wasn't going to get any replies. Then again, it's amazing what rich people will do for free food, so if I was lucky, I could probably convince at least a couple of them to be less busy on the night of the Beetle Drive than their diaries had hitherto suggested. Giddy from a rare sense of accomplishment, and swept along by a rush of something that was either optimism or masochism, I unlocked my phone and pinged a message to Oliver. Do fake boyfriends fake text? I'm not sure what I was expecting in return, but what I got was, not when one of them is due in court. Including the punctuation, which was mildly better than no reply at all, but mildly worse than a flat no, since he'd basically said, "No thanks. Also, don't forget, I've got a better job than you." It was close to 9 that evening, and I was eating Kung Po chicken in my socks, when he followed it up with,
"Sorry to keep you waiting. I've thought about it, and we probably should text each other for the sake of verisimilitude."
I left him hanging for a while to show that I also had important life stuff to be getting on with. Never mind that I actually watched 4 episodes of BoJack Horseman and had a vindictive wank before replying, "Sorry to keep you waiting, and no wonder you're single if the second text you send a guy includes the word verisimilitude." There was no reply, even though I sat around till 1:30, definitely not caring. I was unexpectedly de-sleeped by a buzzing from my phone at 5 a.m.
"My apologies. Next time I'll send a photograph of my penis."
And then several further buzzings.
"That was a joke. I should probably make it clear that I'm not intending to send you any pictures. I've never sent that sort of thing to anybody. As a lawyer, it's hard not to be aware of the potential consequences."
I was awake now, which normally I'd have found profoundly objectionable. But you'd have to be a way better person than me not to enjoy the hell out of Oliver losing his shit over a purely hypothetical dick pic.
"I also realize you're probably asleep at the moment, so perhaps if you could just delete the previous 5 messages when you wake up. Of course, I should emphasize that I am not meaning to imply any judgment about people who do choose to send intimate photographs to one another. It's just not something I'm comfortable with. Of course, if it is something you're comfortable with, I understand. Not that I'm suggesting you have to send me a picture of your penis. Oh God, can you please delete every text I've ever sent you?"
The influx of messages paused just long enough that I could pop off a reply. "Sorry, I'm confused. Am I getting a dick pic or what?"
"No."
There was another pause. Then,
"I'm very embarrassed, Lucien. Please don't make it worse."
I honestly don't know what possessed me. Maybe I felt sorry for him? But he had kind of, admittedly accidentally, made my morning. "I'm looking forward to seeing you tomorrow."
"Thank you."
Okay, now I wish I hadn't bothered. Except a second or two later, I got,
"I'm looking forward to seeing you too."
And while that felt better, it was, if anything, even more confusing. Chapter 10. It was pretty typical for my life that when I finally had a brunch date with an attractive, only slightly annoying man, my mum rang. "A bit busy right now." Busy in this case was code for standing in my underpants trying to find an outfit that said, "I'm sexy yet respectable, and I promise I won't randomly try to kiss you again, but if you change your mind, I'd be up for it." Maybe something in the jumper family? Cuddly, but with a touch of sensuality.
"Luke?"
There was an edge of concern in her voice that I really wanted to ignore.
"I need you to come right away."
How right away is right away? Did I, for example, have time for a couple of rounds of French toast and an eggs benedict with a hot barrister?
"Please, mon canton. It is important."
Okay, she had my attention. The thing is, Mum has a crisis every 30 minutes, but she's usually pretty good at signalling the difference between "Judy's lost her watch in a cow" and "there's water coming through the ceiling." I flumped down onto the edge of the bed. "What's wrong?"
"I don't want to say over the phone."
"Mum," I asked, "have you been kidnapped?"
"No. Then I would be saying, help, I have been kidnapped."
"But you couldn't say that, because the kidnappers wouldn't let you." She made an exasperated noise.
"Don't be silly. The kidnappers would have to let me tell you I'd been kidnapped. Otherwise, what would be the point of kidnapping me in the first place?"
A brief pause.
"What you should have asked is, have you been replaced by a robot policeman from the future who wants to murder me?"
I blinked. "Have you?"
No, but that is what I would say if I had been replaced by a robot policeman from the future who wants to murder you.
You do know I have an actual date with an actual man.
And I'm very happy for you, but this cannot wait.
Mum, I said firmly, this is getting weird. What's going on? There was a pause, which a paranoid part of me did think felt like the kind of pause you'd leave if you had to non-verbally ask a kidnapper for instructions.
Listen to me, Luke. This is not the same as when I said you had to come immediately because my life was in danger, and it turned out that I just needed you to replace the battery in my smoke alarm. Although I do maintain that I could have died. I am old, and I am French. I fall asleep with a cigarette all the time. Also, it was making a very annoying noise. It was like Guantanamo Bay.
How was it like Guant... Actually, never mind.
Please, come over. I'm sorry to do this, but I am playing the you have to trust me card. Because you have to trust me.
Well, that was that. When it came down to it, there was me and Mum, and then there was everybody else. I'll be there as soon as I can. I knew the decent thing to do was ring Oliver and try to explain, but I didn't know how. What was I going to say? Hi, I have this really intense relationship with my mother that probably looks creepy and codependent from the outside, so I'm calling off the date. I basically begged you to go on with me. Also, I was a coward, so I texted instead. Can't make it. Can't explain why. Sorry. Enjoy brunch. Then I hastily revised my sartorial choices from I am going on a date and trying to salvage my reputation to I might have to deal with anything from a death in the family to an exploding toilet, and pegged it to the station. While I was on the train, Oliver called, and I winced, before nobly diverting him to voicemail. He left one, too. Who the fuck does that? Judy was waiting for me at Epsom in her rickety green Lotus 7. I coerced two spaniels into the footwell and slid in underneath the third. She snapped her goggles into place.
All aboard!
I'd long since given up expecting her to care either way, and today was no exception. She slammed her foot down with an enthusiasm that... had I not been fully aboard, would have left me smeared all over the road. "How's Mum?" I yelled, over the rush of the wind and the rattle of the engine and the excitement of the spaniels.
"Bloody distraught!"
I nearly threw up my own heart. "Fuck! What's happened?"
"Yara Sophia had a complete breakdown in the lip-sync, and she'd hitherto been so sickeningly fierce."
"And in the real world?"
"Oh, Odile's fine. Fighting fit. Bright-eyed, bushy-tailed, wet-nosed, glossy coat, all that."
"Then why did she sound upset on the phone?"
"Well, bit of a shock, but you'll find out."
I extricated one of the spaniels from my crotch. "Look, I'm kind of freaking out here, and it would be really helpful if you'd tell me what was going on."
"Nil freak-a-random, old thing. But I'm afraid I absolutely have to be like Dad on this one."
"Who's Dad?"
"Anybody's dad. You know, be like Dad, keep Mum."
"What?" To give Judy her due, she had managed to distract me from the imminent mysterious disaster.
"Sorry, probably not PC anymore. Probably now you have to say, be like Dad, keep in touch with your feelings, or something."
She thought for a moment.
"Or I suppose for you homosexuals, it's be like Dad, keep Dad, which is just barely confusing for everybody."
"Yeah, that's what they put on our T-shirts. Some people are just bally confusing for everybody. Get over it."
"Anyway, I know it's all a bit wobble-inducing, but stiff upper lip. I'll have you there in no time."
"Honestly, it's fine. Take your..." The sudden jolt of acceleration ripped away the remains of my protestation, and I spent the next 10 minutes trying not to die, juggling spaniels and clinging to the sides of the vehicle as we careened up hill and down dale, through twisty country lanes and villages that, prior to our passing through them, I'd have characterised as sleepy. We screeched to a halt outside Mum's, which had once been the village post office, and was now a pretty little detached house called the Old Post Office, that sat at the end of a road called Old Post Office Road. That seemed to be how names worked around here.
Old Post Office Road was off Main Road, which turned variously into Mill Road, Rectory Road, and Three Fields Road.
"I'll just shove off,"
announced Judy.
"Got to see a chap about his bullocks. Rather fancy them, to be honest."
And with that, she roared away into the distance, spaniels barking. Unlatching the gate, I made my way through the slightly overgrown front garden and let myself into the house. I'm not entirely sure what I'd been expecting, but it definitely wasn't John Fleming. At first, I thought I was having some kind of hallucination. He'd been around when I was very young, but I had no memory of him, so this was effectively the first time I'd seen my, you know, father in person. And I had no way of processing it, just a vague sense of a man wearing a scarf indoors and getting away with it. He and Mum were sitting at the opposite ends of the living room, looking like two people who ran out of things to say a very long time ago. "What the fuck?" I said.
"Luke?"
Mum stood, actually wringing her hands.
"I know you won't remember him very well, but this is your father."
"I know who he is. What I don't know is why he's here."
"Well, that's why I called. He has something to tell you."
I folded my arms. "If it's sorry, or I've always loved you, or some bullshit like that, he's about 25 years too late." At this, John Fleming also got to his feet. As the saying goes, nothing says family like everyone standing around, staring awkwardly at each other.
"Lucien," he said. "Or you prefer Luke, is that right?"
I would have been happy to live my entire life without having to look my dad in the face. Unfortunately, as with so much else, he wasn't giving me the choice. And I will tell you now, it was the weirdest fucking thing. Because the way someone seems in a photograph, and the way they really are, is this horrible, uncanny valley of recognition and strangeness. And it's even worse when you can see bits of yourself in them. My eyes looking back at me. That strange, not quite blue, not quite green. There was an opportunity here to take the high road. I chose not to. "I'd prefer you didn't talk to me at all." He sighed, sad and noble, in a way he had no right being. That was the problem with being old and having good bone structure. You got this giant whack of unearned dignity.
"Luke," he tried again. "Yeah, I've got cancer."
Of course he did.
"So?" "So, it's made me realise some things. Made me think about what's important."
"What, you mean the people you abandoned?" Mum put a hand on my arm.
"Mon cher, I would be the first to agree that your father is a shady carabudin. But he could die."
"Sorry to repeat myself, but so?" On some level, I was aware that there was a difference between not taking the high road and taking a road so low that it involved tunnelling straight to hell. But right then, nothing felt even 2% real.
"I'm your father,"
said John Fleming, which his gravelly rock legend voice somehow transformed from a meaningless platitude into a profound statement of mutual connectedness.
"This is my last chance to know you."
There was a buzzing in my head, like I'd snorted bees. A lifetime of manipulative movie bullshit had taught me exactly how I was supposed to behave here. I was allowed a brief flash of unconvincing anger, then I'd cry, then he'd cry, then we'd hug, then the camera would pan out and all would be forgiven. I looked him straight in those wise, sorrowful, too familiar eyes. "Oh, fuck off and die. I mean, fuck off and literally die. You could have done this at any time in the last 2 decades. You don't get to do it now."
"I know I've let you down."
He was nodding sincerely, as though he was trying to tell me he understood what I was saying better than I understood it myself.
"But it's taken me a long time to get to where I always should have been."
"Then write a fucking song about it.
you arrogant, narcissistic, manipulative, bald wanker. Then I got the hell out of there. As the door swung closed behind me, I caught Mum's voice saying,
"Well, I think that could have gone a lot worse."
Which was her all over, really. Pucklethroop in the Wold did technically have a taxi service, or at least it had a bloke called Gavin who you could call and he'd come and pick you up in his car and charge you about a fiver to take you to one of the three places he was willing to go. But it was actually only a 40-minute walk across the fields to the station, and I was having the sort of hot, ragey, cryy feelings that made avoiding other humans a pretty high priority for me. I was very slightly calmer by the time I was on a train, whooshing back to London, and for some reason I decided that would be a good moment to pick up Oliver's voicemail.
"Lucien," he said, "I don't know what I was expecting, but this clearly isn't going to work. There isn't going to be an in future, but if in some imaginary future you were thinking of standing me up again, at least do me the courtesy of inventing a decent excuse. And I'm sure you're finding all this very funny, but it isn't something I need in my life right now."
Well, that was what it was. I listened to it again, and then immediately wondered why the fuck I'd done that to myself. I guess maybe I was hoping it would be better the second time around. It wasn't. The carriage was mostly empty. It was a funny time of day to be heading into the city, so I tucked my face into the crook of my arm and shed some surreptitious tears. I didn't even know what I was crying over. I'd had an argument with a father I didn't remember, and been dumped by a guy I wasn't dating. Neither of those things should have hurt. Didn't hurt. I wasn't going to let them hurt. I mean, yes, I was probably going to lose my job, and probably be alone forever, and my father would probably die of cancer. But you know what? Fuck everything. I was going to go home, put on my dressing gown, and drink until nothing mattered anymore. There was fuck all I could do about the other stuff. But I could do that. Chapter 11. 2 hours later, I was in Clerkenwell, standing outside one of those dinky Georgian terraces with the wrought iron railings and the window boxes, holding down Oliver's doorbell as if I was worried it would fall off the wall.
"What?" he said when he finally answered. "Is wrong with you?"
"So many, many things. But I'm really sorry, and I don't want a fake breakup." His eyes narrowed.
"Have you been crying?"
"No."
Ignoring my obvious and pointless lie, he stepped out of the doorway.
"Oh, for God's sake, come in."
Inside, Casa de Blackwood was everything I'd expected in some ways, and nothing like I'd expected in others. It was tiny and immaculate, all white-painted walls and stripped wooden floors, with flashes of jewel-bright colour from rugs and throw pillows. Effortlessly homey and grown-up and shit, leaving me jealous and intimidated and weirdly yearny. Oliver closed his laptop and hurriedly tidied away a selection of already nearly stacked papers before settling onto the far end of the two-seater sofa. He was in what I guessed to be his casual mode, well-fitting jeans and a light blue cashmere jumper and bare feet, which I found strangely intimate. I mean, not in a fetishy way, just in a this-is-what-I-look-like-when-people-aren't-around way.
"I don't understand you, Lucien."
He rubbed at his temples despairingly.
"You ditched me with no explanation, by text, because a phone call would apparently be too much, and then you turn up on my doorstep, still with no explanation, because a phone call would apparently not be enough."
I tried to pick a not-avoiding or crowding-you spot on the sofa, and sat in it, knocking my knee against his anyway. "I should have phoned, like, both times. Except I guess if I'd phoned the first time, I wouldn't have had to phone this time."
"What happened? I honestly thought you couldn't be bothered."
"I'm not that much of a flake. I get that the evidence is kind of against me here. But I do need this. This..." I gave an inarticulate wave. "Thing we're doing. And I'll try to do better if you give me another chance." Oliver's eyes were at their silverest, soft and stern at the same time. How can you expect me to trust you'll do better next time when you still won't talk to me about this time?
I had some family shit. I thought it was important, but it wasn't. It won't happen again, and you signed up for a fake boyfriend, not a real basket case.
I knew what I was getting into. I wasn't quite strong enough for Oliver's opinion of me right now.
Look, I get I'm not what you're looking for, but can you please stop throwing it in my face?
He seemed genuinely flustered. That wasn't what I meant. I was just trying to say that I didn't expect you to be something you weren't.
What? Like remotely reliable or sane?
Like easy or ordinary?
I stared at him. I think my mouth might actually have been hanging open.
Lucien, he went on, I realize we're not friends, and that perhaps we're not naturally suited to one another. That given the opportunity, you'd have chosen to be with anybody else rather than me. But,
he shifted uncomfortably,
we've agreed to be part of each other's lives, and I can't do this if you can't be open with me.
My dad's got cancer,
I blurted out.
Oliver looked at me the way I'd like to imagine I'd look at somebody who'd just told me their dad had cancer, but blatantly wouldn't.
I'm so sorry. Of course you had to be with him. Why on earth didn't you say that at the beginning?
Well, because I didn't know. My mum just told me something important was happening, and I believed her because I'll always believe her. And I didn't tell you because I thought you'd think it was weird.
Why would I think it's weird that you love your mother?
I don't know. I always worry it makes me sound like Norman Bates.
His hand settled warmly on my knee, and while I probably should have, I didn't see any reason to shake him off. It's very admirable of you, and I appreciate your honesty.
Thanks. Thanks.
Wow. Oliver being nice to me was way harder to deal with than Oliver being angry with me. Is it all right if I ask about your father? Is there anything I can do?
Yeah, you cannot ask about my father. He patted my knee in this gently sympathetic way that I could never have managed without it feeling like a come-on.
I understand. It's a family matter and I shouldn't intrude.
I'm sure he wasn't trying to make me feel bad. But he was doing a really good job of it regardless. It's not that. I just hate the fucker.
I see. I mean,
he blinked.
I don't. He's your father, and he's got cancer.
He still walked out on Mum and me. Come on, you must know this.
Know what?
ODLO Donald and John Fleming. Big passion, big breakup, small kid. Do you not read the papers? Hasn't Bridge told you?
I was aware that you were peripherally famous. I didn't consider it relevant.
We were quiet a moment. God knows what was going through his head, and I was just confused. I'd always resented people thinking they knew who I was from something they'd read or seen or heard on a podcast, but I'd also apparently got used to it. So used to it that having to actually tell a person about my life was a little bit scary. I can't decide, I said finally, if this is really sweet or really apathetic of you.
I'm pretending to date you, not your parents.
I shrugged. Most people think my parents are the most interesting thing about me.
Perhaps that's because you don't let them know you.
The last person who knew me... Never mind. No way was I going there, not today. Not ever again. I let out a shaky breath. The point is, my dad's a dick who treated my mum like shit, and now he's doing this big comeback where everyone's acting like it's okay, and it's not okay, and it fucks me off. Oliver's brow wrinkled.
I can see how that would be difficult. But if he truly might die, you should probably be sure you aren't making any choices you can't unmake.
What's that supposed to mean?
Just that... If the worst happens, and afterwards you regret not giving him a chance, there'll be nothing you can do about it.
What if that's a risk I'm willing to take?
It's your call.
Would you think less of me?
I coughed.
Well,
even less of me. I don't think badly of you, Lucien. Apart from being the sort of self-involved arsehole who'd stand up his date for fun. At this, he went a little pink.
I'm sorry. I was upset and said some unfair things. Though in my defence, I'm not sure how you expected me to factor in the possibility that your behaviour was a result of your having received a cryptic message from your reclusive rock icon mother, and having then learned that your estranged father, whose recent return to the limelight you profoundly resent, has a life-threatening illness.
Pro tip, apologise or make excuses. Don't do both.
You're right.
Oliver leaned toward me a little, his breath whispering across my cheek.
I'm sorry I hurt you.
It would have taken only the slightest of movements to kiss him, and I very nearly did, because this whole conversation was taking me down a rabbit hole of feelings and memories and... ugh, stuff I had trouble sharing with my actual friends. But he'd made it pretty clear he wasn't up for that, so instead I had to say, I'm sorry I hurt you too. There was a long silence, with us both hovering awkwardly on the edge of each other's personal space. Are we really bad at this? I asked. We've been fake dating for 3 days and we've already fake broken up once.
Yes, but we fake resolved our difficulties and fake got back together, and I'm hoping it's made us fake stronger.
I laughed, which was crazy because this was Oliver Blackwood, the stuffiest man in the universe. You know, I was genuinely looking forward to brunch.
Well?
He gave me an uncertain smile.
You're here now, and everything's still in the fridge.
It's nearly 6. That's not brunch, it's... Brinner?
Does it matter?
Wow, you rebel, you!
Oh yes, that's me. Sticking 2 fingers up at society and its normative concept of mealtimes.
So, I tried to sound casual, but I was about to touch on something very serious indeed. This brunch, Brinner, punk rock rejection of the egg-based status quo, will there be French toast? Oliver flicked up a brow.
There could be, if you're very good.
I can be good. What sort of good did you have in mind?
Maybe you can set the table?
I hid a smile behind my hand, because I didn't want him to think I was mocking him, even if I kind of was. But I guess this was exactly what I'd signed up for, a man who probably owned napkin rings. After all, the male was unlikely to run with rock star love child in wrong fork shame. What I hadn't expected, though, was how nice. How safe. How right it would feel. Chapter 12. I did, in fact, set the table, though thankfully there were no napkin rings. We ate in Oliver's kitchen, at a tiny circular table about 3 feet away from the hob, with our knees touching underneath it, because apparently we were doomed to an eternity with our legs tangled up together. I'd secretly enjoyed watching him cook for me, heating oil, chopping garnish, and breaking eggs with the same care and precision he brought to everything else. Also, there was no denying he was easy on the eyes when he wasn't judging me, which I was starting to suspect he did way less often than I'd imagined. So, how many of me were you expecting? I asked, surveying the bounty of eggs and waffles and blueberries and multiple varieties of toast, French included.
He blushed. I got a little carried away. It's been a while since I've had anyone to cook for.
I suppose, since we're meant to be dating, we should know this sort of stuff about each other. How long's a while?
6 months, give or take.
That's not a while, that's practically a now.
It's longer than I prefer to go without a partner.
I stared at him, over my eggs Benedict. What? Are you some kind of relationship junkie?
Well, when were you last with somebody?
Define with.
The fact you're even asking says quite a lot.
Fine, I scowled. Nearly 5 years? He gave a thin smile. Perhaps it would be best if we refrained from passing comment on each other's choices.
This is an amazing Brynner, I said, by way of a preemptive peace offering, then launched straight into, so why did you break up?
I'm not entirely sure. He said he just wasn't happy anymore.
Ouch.
He shrugged. There comes a point when enough people have said, it's not you, it's me, that you begin to suspect it may, in fact, be you.
Why? What's wrong with you? Do you hog the duvet? Are you secretly racist? Do you think Roger Moore was a better Bond than Connery?
No, good God, no. Although I do think Moore is somewhat underrated.
Handling the serving spoon with irritating deftness, Oliver poured a perfect spiral of cream onto his poppy seed waffle.
I honestly believed it was working. But then I always do.
I snapped my fingers. Ah, you must be terrible in bed.
Clearly. He gave me a wry look. Another mystery solved.
Damn it, I was hoping you'd get defensive and I'd at least find out something dirty about you.
Why, Lucien, for someone who's made it abundantly clear that he's not interested, you seem quite fascinated with my sex life.
Heat rushed to my face. I'm not.
If you say so.
No, really, it's...
Ugh, this was a mess. Partly because I was maybe a bit more curious than I wanted to admit. Oliver was so self-possessed that it was hard not to wonder what he was like when he let go. If he let go. What it would be like to inspire that kind of recklessness in him.
I'm just sort of aware that anything you wanted to know about me you could Google.
Would it be the truth, though?
I cringed. Some of it. And not only the good stuff.
If there's one thing I've learned in my line of work, it's that some of the truth is the most misleading thing you can hear. Anything I want to know about you, I'll ask.
What about, I said, in a small voice, when you're mad at me, when you're looking for reasons to think the worst of me.
And you believe I'll need the papers to help me with that?
I shot him an outraged glare, but for some reason I ended up smiling instead. Something about the way he was looking at me took the sting from his words.
Is that what passes for reassurance in your world?
I don't know. Is it working?
Weirdly, maybe a little bit.
I distracted myself with the French toast, which was rich and sweet and dripping with maple syrup. You'll end up looking, though. Everyone always does.
Do you really think I have nothing better to do with my time than webstalk the E-list children of C-list celebrities?
Again, with the mean comforting. What the hell is that about?
I wasn't sure you'd accept any other kind.
He looked slightly abashed, chasing a blueberry round and round his plate. Honestly, he might have been right, but I wasn't going to give him the satisfaction of admitting it.
Try me.
I'm not going to make you any promises because that just gives all this nonsense more power over you. But
it's easy for you to call it nonsense. You don't live with it.
He gave an exasperated little huff.
See? I said you wouldn't want my reassurance.
You haven't given me any reassurance. You told me you aren't going to make any promises and dicked on my pain.
It wasn't my intent to dick.
We eyed each other warily over the battlefield of our breakfast foods. In many ways, our second date was going as badly as our first. Hell, in many ways it was going worse, since I'd arrived 6 hours late and been dumped before I got there. But it felt different. Somehow, even being annoyed with him brought with it this strange